It's time.
Imagine that unbelievable new deck in your backyard. Outdoor Living Unlimited is Wisconsin's number one TimberTech deck builder. Building new decks and replacing old ones, creating that million-dollar feeling every time you relax in your own backyard. Looking for a company to make your backyard scream wow? Stop by Outdoor Living Unlimited's resourceful Waukesha showroom and visit OutdoorLivingUnlimited.com.
Time for some fresh air. So start packing, put on some sunscreen, and grab your favorite walking stick. This is WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Here's your host, Steve Scafidi.
Welcome to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. I am a huge fan of this place. I'm not a huge racing fan, but I've been to Elkhart Lakes Road America on several occasions. One of my good friends, Jack Baldwin, raced there a few years ago, and I went to go see him race. Joining us on WTMJ Outdoors is John Ebert. He's the communications director for Elkhart Lakes Road America. Hey, John.
Thanks for having me. I tell you what, really appreciate you being on. This is super exciting.
Yeah, I love the track, and it's someone who has never been there. Give us the quick description. It's just so cool, the place to watch a race event. I think I was watching on my friend Jack race Porsches that day, but it's just an awesome place to see a race. The setting is cool, and all the things you do out there. So let's talk about a little bit about the history and what this place looks like.
Yeah, what's really unique is the reason why they call it Road America is because it truly is an amazing place. Road is in the name because it emulates road course racing, which actually began in the United States in the early 50s, post-World War II. A lot of airmen, a lot of soldiers were coming back from overseas, and they were bringing sports cars from Europe and other places and racing them actually on the roadways of all over places around the United States. Well, Elkhart Lake established that as well, and there were actually road races going around the area of Elkhart Lake up until about 1952, 1953. Then they realized, hey, we got to do something safer. There were some accidents that occurred on the East Coast. So Cliff Tufte got together a group of investors and built Road America, purchased 525 acres back in 1953, 1954. They put a shovel in the ground. He actually walked the actual race course and put a stake in the ground where he wanted to turn, but he wanted the racetrack to emulate the roads around the area. So topographically, nothing has changed. We haven't really dug anything out. He walked the hillsides. He made a bunch of long straightaways, a bunch of different right-hand turns, a bunch of different left-hand turns. It's 4 miles, 14 turns, all through the Kettle Moraine countryside near Elkhart Lake, and they called it Road America. Since then, it's evolved into America's National Park of Speed, and the reason why it's unique there is because once you drive through the gates, if you don't hear cars on the racetrack, you truly feel like you're in a national park, and you can move around to all parts of the facility. You're not dedicated to a seat. You're not dedicated to a certain area. You can watch from turn 5. You can watch from turn 12. You can watch from turn 14. We have 14 turns, as I had said, 14 concession stands, clean restrooms near every concession stand, immense parking. They actually kind of designed it a little bit backwards when you think about it, because if you go to American Family Field or if you go to Lambeau Field, you park outside and you walk inside. Well, here you actually drive into the facility and you can move about the facility, tailgate directly from your car in your favorite turn or your favorite straightaway, and actually watch some world-class racing. Lots of great shade trees. We even have a beach over by turn 11 where you can put your feet in the sand, sit under a palm tree and watch some world-class racing. Lots of video screens around the facility, an app where you can actually pay attention to what's going on and what turns some of the top competitors are in, plus the most diverse schedule of any road course in North America. So when you think IndyCar, when you think IMSA, when you think GT World Challenge, when you think vintage, it's all really right here. And we just encourage people to go to roadamerica.com, search around, play around, read around, and actually figure out what you want to see and do here, because it's not just racing. We do weddings. We have disc golf. We have go-karting at the Motorplex. We have off-road adventures. You can even walk, bike, or run the track in the summertime for our 4 miles of fitness, which is Mondays and Wednesdays from 6 to 8 p.m. You can walk, bike, or run the track. So if you're worried about cars or trucks or motorcycles and you're walking next to a country road, you don't have to. Just come to Road America.
That's
got to
be a hell of a challenge running that track.
Absolutely. It's really incredible when you think about it, because, you know, coming up that front straight after you've just gone around for about three and three quarters of a mile, it's a haul getting up that front straight, but it's a heck of a lot of fun to actually be on the racing surface, getting some exercise, putting your steps in, trying to close the ring on your Apple Watch, and you're walking in the footsteps of where history has been made since 1955.
You were talking about the fact that this track was built in 1953, and it's so big, and it, as you said, emulates sort of the area that it's built in. You've had a lot of famous drivers. I mean, maybe the most famous, maybe not, Paul Newman used to come out there, right?
Paul Newman, Tom Cruise. We recently just had comedian Adam Carolla competing in one of our vintage events.
Oh, very cool.
So when you think about big names, even Walter Payton, Tim Allen, Patrick Dempsey, there's lots of famous names that have raced here. Paul Newman filmed the movie Winning in 1968. Adam Carolla has since produced a documentary all about that movie. It's really unique. So you don't really have to know a lot about motorsports to come here and have a good time. Families have reunions. They have all kinds of meetups and things like that. It's America's National Park of Speed because there's so many things to see and do. But if there's a famous name in the books that people may not know a lot about motorsports, but have heard, Mario Andretti, David Hobbs, Parnelli Jones, Al Unser Jr., every single name of the like has raced here. And it's neat because drivers love this track. They love the old school feel. They love the challenges. And when you win at Road America, you've truly made a notch in your belt. A trophy from Road America is certainly one that sits in the front of the trophy case for racers the world over, because it is that well-renowned.
John Everett joining us from Elkhart Lakes Road America. Great track. All right, so you mentioned events. Let's look at August and maybe into the fall. What's coming up out there?
Yeah, what's really great is get ready for some incredible racing. The GT World Challenge will be here August 15th through the 17th, and you can see all sorts of great cars from the North American GR Cup Series, GT4. So we're talking about McLaren, Mercedes, BMW, Ferrari, Aston Martin, Audi, all sorts of cars will be on the track. So if you think about video games like Forza, if you think about all the greatest GT production cars that are on the road right now, these cars will actually be racing on track. And what's great about that, too, is there's an open paddock, so you can get right up and close and see these cars being worked on, talk to the crews, talk to the drivers, get autographs, get pictures with your family, and then see these cars out on track. So these are some incredible cars, some incredible production racing. And it will be going on August 15th through the 17th. Then, if you want to talk about events coming up in the fall, in September, the Aaron's Art on Wheels Vintage Weekend with VSCDA will be here September 12th through the 14th. What's unique about that event? We're celebrating our 70th anniversary all season long. It will culminate at that event because that's essentially right around the same weekend when the first race was held here in 1955. So we're going to have fireworks on Friday night. Your event admission gets you in to see the fireworks show. We're going to have all sorts of interesting dioramas with all sorts of vintage cars, actual competitors from the first 5 or 10 years talking about what it was like to race at Road America back in the day. Lots of other competitors here from various other entities will be here. And lots of things to see and do and some incredible cars on the track in about 11 classes. So if you want to think about every era of racing, it's going to be on track during the Aaron's Art on Wheels Vintage Weekend, September 12th through the 14th.
All right, love it. For folks who want to find out more about the events, information about that, and more importantly, how to get tickets and get out to the great track, how do they do that?
Super simple, roadamerica.com. You can surf around, you can play around. We have teen driving schools, motorcycle schools, you name it, we've got it. So if you're thinking about the kids going back to school for high school, college, whatever, check out our teen driving program. It's a great way to give them more confidence behind the wheel if you want to get your motorcycle license. But everything's right there at roadamerica.com. You can find out about events. You can find out about amenities. You can find out about all sorts of stuff. Get your tickets, print them at home, breeze right through the gate, and have a great time.
John Everett, Communications Director, Elkhart Lakes Road America. How cool is your job, by the way?
I tell you what, I love my job. I get to have a party every 2 weeks and all my friends show up.
There you go. Thanks for joining WTMJ Outdoors, John.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited on 620 WTMJ.
Back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. As you know, those of you who have followed me for all the years on 620 WTMJ, I'm a big fan of locally grown food, farmers markets. I used to have a massive one-acre garden. Now I have a greenhouse. I love all of that stuff. And I thought it's part of the outdoors presentation, the things we do on this program, which is everything outdoors. How can we not talk about things that are growing in the state of Wisconsin, how people get access to those things? Got a great guest on the program. She's Addie Ferber. She represents the Farm Fresh Atlas of Wisconsin, and she's the director. Welcome, Abby, to WTMJ Outdoors.
Thanks so much, Steve. Glad to be here.
All right, so let's sort of fill in some of the missing pieces for folks who are listening for the first time and maybe haven't heard of the Farm Fresh Atlas of Wisconsin. What do you do? What do you provide to consumers and people who consume locally grown foods?
So the Farm Fresh Atlas is both a print magazine and a website, and we help people in Wisconsin find where to buy local food. So we list over 500 farms, farmers markets, restaurants, food businesses that are everywhere from Kenosha to Superior, Wisconsin. And if you're interested, you can always pick up a print copy of the Farm Fresh Atlas at our local library or farmers market.
It's funny. That's where I first heard about you guys. Someone handed me one of those guys. So when you talk about farmers markets across the state, I'm familiar with a few. We have one in Oak Creek, the city I live in. I know there's a South Shore one in Milwaukee. But as you said, they are all over the place. And I correct me if I'm wrong, they are gaining in popularity because people are starting to understand how locally grown food produce in the summer in Wisconsin is such a big deal.
Yeah, because locally grown produce, it tastes so good because it's so fresh. And it also is a wonderful place to meet your community, where you're meeting farmers and other people who love to eat locally. All these farmers markets are going to have vegetables, obviously, fruits that are delicious and ripe. But you're also going to find lots of Wisconsin cheeses, locally raised and ethically raised meats, and other kinds of products like honeys or soaps. It really is supporting our local economy here in Wisconsin when you go and you shop at the farmers market.
When we talk about the allure of a farmers market, in Wisconsin it's somewhat limited. We have, you know, only a few months, not a few months. We have about half the year where it's really nice enough to be outside and shopping for all the things you just talked about. But it is really an essential piece of our state economy, right?
Yeah. Local food is kind of this vital backbone of how a lot of people eat. Yes, you can go to the grocery store, and yes, you can also go to the co-op, but we're also seeing a lot more restaurants, too, picking up local foods and having them be a real big part of what we eat in Wisconsin.
How has it grown over let's just say the last few years, the popularity of farmers markets and locally grown food? I know the pandemic sort of recreated that idea that people could grow their own food because people weren't necessarily going to stores as much.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of farmers markets shifted around during the pandemic. You know, there were some during the pandemic that were doing drive-through farmers markets. And also, you know, the other big change is that it's much easier nowadays to be able to buy things at the farmers market using your credit card. It used to be that mostly it was a cash-based economy and you had to stop at the ATM before going to the farmers market. But now it's a lot of retailers people who vend at the farmers market are taking credit cards.
How often do you update the Atlas? Is that a monthly?
The online website at farmfreshatlas.org is updated continuously year-round. As we learn about new businesses or as new markets open up, they're updated there. And then the print guide comes out once a year, and it starts getting distributed every May.
So I wanted to ask you about the REAP food group. So that is sort of the umbrella that the Farm Fresh Atlas is part of. What does the REAP Food Group do?
Yeah, so REAP Food Group has been in Madison for 25 years, trying to build up the local food economy. Years ago, you know, when we started in 2002, locavore, the word that means someone who eats locally,
right,
it hadn't even been coined yet. And so REAP and the growth of the Dane County Farmers Market and the farm-to-table restaurant movement really had one of its inceptions here in Madison, Wisconsin. And for the past 25 years, REAP Food Group has been working
working to connect consumers to locally produced food, but also helping food producers and farmers to grow their business to become more successful. And now we're starting to do work in wholesale and the infrastructure of the food system here in Dane County area.
Before we go to break, so I want to ask you about your personal story after the break. The Farm Fresh Atlas, how can folks find it? What's the easiest place to find a copy?
Right now, you can go to farmfreshatlas.org and download a PDF of the print guide or order, request a print guide to be sent to you. You can also view the map of Wisconsin, do some searching, find specific foods, farmfreshatlas.org. If you want to get a copy in hand, there'll probably be one at your farmer's market. You can find those, again, farmfreshatlas.org, or check your public library. We send out about 10,000 copies to every single public library in Wisconsin. See if your library's got a copy.
Very cool. Love those local libraries as well. Addie Ferber's our guest. She's director at Farm Fresh Atlas of Wisconsin. After the break, I love the personal stories, how people got to be doing what they're doing. We'll find out what Addie's story is as we move forward on WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. Steve Scavitti, your host, as always, here on WTMJ. Got a great guest today, Addie Ferber. In the first segment, we talked a little bit about Farm Fresh Atlas and what they do, all those great farmers markets working with local growers. I always am fascinated, though, by people's personal stories. And Addie, hopefully we can get you to share a little bit of how you got to be doing what you're doing. This is the America's Dairyland. It says so on our license plates. And you're working directly with local growers and sort of celebrating everything that's great outdoors when it comes to locally sourced food. How did you get into this?
Well, I and myself have been a gardener for a long time. My mom likes to tell this story of actually the first time I ran away from home as a little kid. I decided I was going to go move into the garden because there was all of this food there that I could eat. And so I grabbed my sleeping bag and my pillow, and I went and I slept in the middle of the raspberry patch. So I've been a gardener for years and years. And then early when REAP was first starting, I was a volunteer with the organization, helping run summer festivals where we were introducing people to local food, where we were having, you know, the first Pie Palooza, where we served 500 locally baked pies with local ingredients for breakfast one morning. So I've always been a gardener and loved eating locally, and connecting with REAP Food Group as a volunteer was a really great way for me to see the good work that this organization is doing. And then a few years ago, the position of director opened up, and I was glad to step into this role leading this great magazine. Next year actually is going to be the 25th anniversary of the Farm Fresh Atlas. So I'm kind of excited to see what's going to happen next year for our anniversary.
And before we let you get out of here, we'll have you give out the easiest way to find a copy or go online to find that at the end of the interview. But I want to ask you, you know, it's not always great news when it comes to growing and growing, you know, certainly the things we eat in Wisconsin. Have there been challenges in recent years when it comes to for local growers or challenges getting to market? Well, obviously, the pandemic is part of that story. What have you seen in your time sort of leading this this publication?
Yeah, things are really increasingly challenging for small farmers across Wisconsin. It's really hard for them to find land to grow food. And when they can grow food, it's always so difficult to find reliable places to buy that. We often at REAP will get connected with farmers who, say, have a bounty, you know, hundreds of bags of fresh grown spinach, and they need to, say, find an outlet for that. So, you know, until farms get fairly large, it's just this constant struggle for them to have reliable sources of revenue. It's one of the reasons I really like shopping at my farmer's market. It's because I'm taking money out of my hand and I'm giving it to the farmer. There's no middleman. There's no wholesalers. It's just me directly supporting farmers and buying really delicious, fresh local produce.
Addie Ferber, our guest on WTMJ Outdoors from Farm Fresh Atlas of Wisconsin, the REAP Food Group. All right, so when I was telling somebody I was going to have you on the show, they said, all right, so ask this question of her, and I'm going to ask you the question. What makes a great farmer's market, in your opinion?
Ooh, a great farmer's market.
Not a good one, but a great one.
Yeah, for me, it is about feeling like you're walking into a community, right? That it's not like shopping at the grocery store. It's more like going to visit your friends. When I go to my local farmers market, I know a lot of the vendors. I've been buying from them. I've been talking to them about their products. I've been eating and enjoying them. And I like to be able to go back and say, you know, that I got a chicken from Ducks in a Row Farm that was just incredibly delicious and was able to go back and say, thank you so much for this chicken. It was wonderful. So for me, a great farmers market feels like walking into a community.
I love that. And somebody who started a farmer's market is when I was mayor of Oak Creek, Wisconsin, which I'm very proud of and still live there. That is a gathering place for lots of different people. It promotes diversity. It's certainly an introduction to people that you may have lived with and around with for years, but maybe never met them. And on a nice sunny day, hopefully on a Saturday or whatever day your farmer's market is, you get to have that conversation for the first time. And it could be the first of many great conversations. I don't want to make this political, but I wanted to ask a political question sort of on the concept of local growers and how challenging. You made the point about how challenging things are for growers, small farmers in Wisconsin. Have the politics of our day and our age made it more difficult for local growers?
Yeah. Yeah, in two really significant ways for the state of Wisconsin. We had had these two programs, one called Local Foods for Schools and the other one called the Local Foods Purchase Assistance Program. And both of those were federal programs within the USDA that allowed schools and allowed food banks and food pantries to buy locally produced food and pay a little bit more for it than they would if they were, say, buying from a large aggregator. And that money to buy local food for our schools and for our food banks and food pantries was vital and helped with going through the pandemic and stabilizing a lot of opportunities for farmers. Both of those programs were completely eliminated earlier in the year. And that resulted in, you know, I'd mentioned earlier, bags of spinach, fields of carrots, all of these produce that they had, that farmers had planted, anticipating that this money would be there for local purchase. And that money unfortunately disappeared. So yeah, it's really hard and getting harder for farmers, especially small farmers that are raising food for humans to eat.
Well, as I said on the show the other day, if we're going to call ourselves America's Dairyland, we certainly need to make every effort to make it easier and more accessible for all of us who live here in Wisconsin and celebrate the great things that are happening here. Addie Ferber, she's the director at Farm Fresh Atlas of Wisconsin. I'm going to actually have you on my regular show because there's many things that we can talk about related to local growing and the incredible you know, opportunities that exist in the state of Wisconsin. Thanks for joining WTMJ Outdoors.
Thanks so much, Steve. I'll come back anytime. This was fun.
Lots more to come on WTMJ Outdoors presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome to WTMJ Outdoors. I am always excited about my guests, and today I'm very excited because this is something that I actually care about. We have some great pieces to the discussion. Joining us today on WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited, is Bruce Ross, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association. Welcome to WTMJ Outdoors.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to see where our conversation takes us.
Yeah, it's you know, I haven't thought a lot about you know, the sports of you know going after and hunting waterfowl in the state of Wisconsin. I haven't duck hunted in many, many years, but I thought this is one of those sort of benchmarks about traditional hunting in the state of Wisconsin, those of us who defend our rights to hunt. So let's talk about it. Let's talk about the history of your organization, the mission. Let's start from there.
Well, WWA, Wisconsin Waterfowl Association, was founded 41 years ago by an angry man. This fella, Jerry Soulsroot is his name. He's still with us. It was upset that the DNR was not listening to, he thought, Wisconsin waterfowlers on some of the policies that we're making. So he created WWA, got a bunch of his friends who got their friends together and created this organization to at least initially be the voice of waterfowlers. Since then, we've not only are we advocates for waterfowl, waterfowlers, and wetlands that support both, we help bring aboard the next generation of waterfowlers, and not just youth-type learn-to-hunts, but our mission is to advance waterfowlers from newbie to passionate conservationists. So we have programs all along that spectrum. And then finally, we have four ecologists in the state who work on public and private lands to advance the capability and the quantity of wetlands in the state.
So let's talk about the term waterfowl for folks who aren't familiar with that or maybe heard it but don't really associate that with hunting. What species are we talking about? What sort of waterfowl are we referring to?
Yeah, so if your audience sees greenhead ducks in a local pond or on a river, that's probably a drake mallard. That's a duck. And so there's two kind of flavors, not literally but figuratively, of ducks. There's dabblers, which tend to be shallow water, marsh, inland sort of waterfowl, and then there's divers that typically eat their food under the water. They search for mollusks and fishes, and they'll dive through the water. And those are both huntable types of species, and that's what many of our members do, is hunt both of those species. We'd also include in that geese, and typically what your viewers, your listeners would see our Canadian geese, and those are also a huntable species.
Yeah, from a layman's perspective, way too many Canadian geese. Am I correct in my population estimates?
Yeah. Hey, if we had had this conversation 25 years ago, I couldn't give this answer. But yeah, the population is growing, has grown dramatically over those past 25 years, to the point that some cities and counties are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to get rid of them, right? They've become a bit of a nuisance.
Yeah, you see golf courses bring out dogs and stuff and do other sort of techniques to drive them from the golf course. So am I correct, and this is, and maybe for me it'd be anecdotal, are the populations of most Wisconsin waterfowl doing pretty well?
Yeah, generally speaking, that's true. DNR and the federal migratory experts, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, conduct annual counts, actual head counts of waterfowl, ducks, divers, and dabblers, and geese. And the population is generally steady. It fluctuates quite a bit every year, but that's more dependent on whether the land is wet or not, where they're finding to breed, and they need wetlands to do that. And so for the most part, the types of ducks that most Wisconsin residents see are doing okay. The geese population is up. And that's, by the way, in spite of hunting, we've got about 64,000 waterfowlers in the state, and that hunting is regulated both in types of species that can be taken and the number of ducks that one hunter can take in any given period of time. And so hunting is part of the fabric, if you will, of waterfowl management. And that's really migratory bird management, because even if those birds are born here in Wisconsin, they don't respect state borders, and they fly south for the winter, of course, and back north in the spring. And so the ducks that we raise here in Wisconsin are scattered through the course of the year, throughout the course of our flyway along the Mississippi.
One of our guests on WTMJ Outdoors is Bruce Ross, Executive Director of Wisconsin Waterfowl Association. We're going to take a break here, Bruce. After the break, some of the things you're working on right now, I know you have an expo coming up, and then the conversation I really want to have with you about sandhill cranes in Wisconsin, and beyond for that matter, because they're hunted around the country, I believe. We'll get to that and more on WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. Continue our conversation with Bruce Ross, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association. We talked a lot about species and populations in the first segment. I guess some of the things you're working on actively right now as the leader of that organization.
Yeah, we are busy growing our habitat mission. So when I say habitat, that's our restoration of wetlands around the state. Since statehood, Wisconsin has lost 50% of its wetlands. A lot of those are on private lands, but some of those are on public lands. So we work with public landowners and private landowners to identify, to design restorations, to, if the project is right, to bring some funding to that table, and then to oversee the contractors who are actually doing the earth moving. So that's one of our big missions. We have an agreement with the DNR to bring that expertise to their 1.5 million acres of public land. So last year we only did about 560 of them. This year we're going to do thousands of acres on public lands of restoration. So lands that you and I can hunt on or just recreate. And by the way, even if you're not a hunter, the work that we do in those wetlands are very beneficial for the communities that surround them. They help clean the water, they help retain the water in floods, and they create wildlife refuges as well as recreational opportunities for those communities. So we like to think while we're a hunting organization, we're really serving the community.
I love that that sort of commitment to doing that, because I think that speaks well for your organization and for the state of Wisconsin. I guess for me, this is one of those hot button topics. Whenever I have a guest on, I always see what are the things that people are talking about, buzzing about. And I've had a conversation recently with a hunter who was talking about hunting and consuming sandhill crane. And I know that in our sort of pre-show talk, we discussed this, but where does that stand in Wisconsin? Is it still a very hot button topic? And where might that story be going in the near and long-term future?
Yeah, it's very much still a hot button issue. About 6 years ago, when I first came aboard this role with WWA, we took a survey of our members, and 94% of them said we should explore a sandhill crane hunt. So we began an education process for ourselves for the next couple of years. You know, what makes sense, what's happening in the rest of the country, and so on. And we became convinced that if you follow logic, if you follow common sense, if you follow the law, a sandhill crane hunt here in Wisconsin makes sense. We've got three times the population of sandhill cranes that the federal government, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, says we need to support a hunt, three times. And that's growing, and it's rapidly growing. Those birds are taking a significant toll on Wisconsin farmers. Last year, about $4 million was the cost to farmers, half of that in depredation. They'll walk down cornrows, for example, and just pull out freshly planted seeds, or they'll damage potatoes, or farmers who are trying to prevent all of that spend another $2 million to try and put some chemical on some of that seed to prevent that. And underlying it all, aside from the numbers and the common sense, they're hunted throughout the country, 17 states, a couple more on the way. I think it's five or six provinces hunt sandhill cranes. And if you back up to the state constitution, there's a constitutional right to harvest game except for reasonable restrictions as stated in law. And so if you can't hunt a sandhill crane in Wisconsin, given all of those factors, then, you know, that constitutional right doesn't really mean anything. So we are busy educating legislators and the general public, because there's a lot of emotion that surrounds this issue. The International Crane Foundation is here in Wisconsin. And, you know, their URL on the Internet is savingcranes.org. So, of course, they're never going to be for a hunt. But I think it's, again, for those reasons I stated, it just kind of makes sense for Wisconsin. So, again, we're educating legislators. There is a bill currently in the Senate and in the Assembly of the state legislature that advances this idea. And that's going to probably undergo significant change over the next several months. But we hope to get it to a vote here in this legislative session.
If you know, do you know who the sponsors of that bill are?
This bill came out of a study. The legislature actually undertook a six-month-long study of the issues that surrounded a hunt of sandhill cranes. They had farmers, representative members from the public. WWA was on there, and there was a bipartisan legislative look at it as well. And they advanced a bill to include hunting of sandhill cranes as well as some farmer help. It was introduced to the legislature by Representative Tittle and Senator Quinn. And while they're not the sponsors per se, because of the process that
that was used to advance the bill, they're the ones who have the most expertise on it.
Before I let you get out of here, we're talking to Bruce Ross, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association. I always want to point people in the direction of finding your organization and give you a little chance to talk about some of the things you may be doing this summer and this fall as we sort of move forward through the hunting and the outdoors calendars. So let's start with the easy one. How do people find you?
We have a website. It's called wisducks.org, wisducks.org.
All right. And some of the events are things that you're looking forward to in the remaining months, I say months, hopefully months of the summer, and then as we head into fall and winter?
Sure. We're right now, we're very excited to be hosting our Waterfowl Hunters Expo. And this is an event, now a two-day event, up in Oshkosh on the county fairgrounds there in Sunnyvale. August 22nd and August 23rd. It's a whole family event. We'll have as many kids there as we have dogs there, as we have women there, as we have men there. Something for the whole family to do, whether you're interested in trying out a shotgun before you buy it, or you want to see the latest and greatest in what the waterfowling industry is providing, or you want to race your retriever, or you want your child to get involved in. We have a wonderful youth zone where you can be painting decoys or building a duck call or, you know, learning how, ducks migrate. So there's something for every age. There's going to be more than you can do in a single day, and it only costs you $10 an adult or kids under 12 for free. So it's a great full-day, cheap date.
There you go. And thanks for being such a great representative for a great organization, because I talk to a lot of different groups, a lot of different leaders, but I love the passion you have for this subject and the fact that you're sort of not afraid to broach some of these more difficult topics, and especially the issue of sandhill cranes. We'll probably talk more down the line about that. Thanks for taking time to join WTMJ Outdoors. Bruce Ross, Executive Director, Wisconsin Waterfowl Association. You want to find out more? WisDucks.org. Is that right?
That's correct. WISDUCKS.org.
All right. Thank you, Bruce. You've been listening to WTMJ Outdoors on 620 WTMJ.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Thanks for taking the time to listen to WTMJ Outdoors today. Love when you tune in. Love when you give me feedback as well. If you ever have an idea for a guest or a topic on WTMJ Outdoors presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited, just email me at steve.scafidi2s1d at wtmj.com. Great show today. John Everett, he's the communications director at Elkhart Lake's famous Road America. It is an amazing track. If you've never been out there, I've been to a couple of races. My friend Jack, as I mentioned in the interview, used to race out there, race Porsche out there, and had a lot of fun. It's a great setting on a great track, and I definitely encourage you to go check it out. That's one of the great things about Wisconsin is Road America in Elkhart Lake. Addie Ferber, I sort of stretched a little bit on WTMJ Outdoors today. She is the director of Farm Fresh Atlas of Wisconsin, and she talked about farmers markets and locally sourced growing vegetables and produce. And as you know, if you listen to my regular radio show, I'm a big fan of growing things, just to have a big garden. She sort of walked us through all of that. So thanks to Addie Ferber. You'll hear more about her on our regular show, Point Taken, in the future. She'll be a guest on there as well. And we finally wrapped it up with Bruce Ross, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association. Great guest. Lots going on when you're talking about hunting, especially sandhill cranes. A little controversial. As always, appreciate the listen. We'll see you next week on WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited on 620 WTMJ.